Today's special guest, Fabian Calvo. It's a pleasure to have Fabian Calvo back on the show. He runs the notehouse.us. Welcome, Fabian Calvo.
Chris, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Start off today, if we could, with the New York Stock Exchange margin debt. Currently, margin levels are at all-time record highs right along with the Dow Jones and the S&P 500. And our listeners will have a chance to look at this chart as well as they download this show later. This looks like a leading indicator. You tend to see some disparity between the stock market and the margin debt, and then it really tails off and craters. And this happened in the last two market zeniths just before the recession. Tell us more about this and what you're watching, please.
It's one of the reasons, what you just laid out, is one of the reasons why we're seeing yet again today the Dow Jones hit a record high. And it's not just the margin debt that's out of control, but it's also these central banks that have pumped in tens of trillions of dollars into global equities. So it's a major, major bubble. And they're inflating these bubbles across the board. I mean, everywhere from the fine art market to the real estate market to the stock market. Certainly the margin debt, you know, as you mentioned, Chris, is a really good indicator for coming busts. However, I think, you know, this time around, there's so many other complexities where we're just not talking about margin debt as it relates to the Dow Jones. We're talking about the multi-bubble U.S. economy across the spectrum. We're talking about major debt levels that have been unprecedented compared to GDP in history. And so there's so many things that I think, you know, it's why I talk about this real economic shift or global economic shift that I think we're on the cusp of.
There really are a lot of cross currents, aren't there? And I'm glad you brought that up. You know, you can't just put your finger like maybe we could in the past 20, 30 years ago and say, oh, well, you know, it's a stock market problem or a bond market issue or, you know, inflation is runaway. No, we've got such a globally connected, interconnected market here around the world with just central bankers out of control, money printing, rehypothecation, you know, Grexit, Cyprus-like event any day, people getting really nervous around the world. And maybe that's a good segue then into the Greek drama. You've been watching this closely. We could see another Cyprus-like event at any moment here, maybe even worse. Tell us what you think about the situation developing there.
I think it's a perfect kind of microcosm, if you will, of what happens when you have, in essence, reckless entitlement social programs that are not being funded, and you're borrowing more money to continue to fuel that type of recklessness. Now, that said, of course, when you have, you know, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan go into Greece, cook their financial books in order to be able to give them even more loans, and in essence, you know, use the Greek islands and use their shipping and use their mining as collateral, or even, you know, some of their archaeological sites, which apparently now are being sold or are being leased out to bankers to have parties. You're going to have a serious problem on your hands. Now, with Greece, though, I'd say, Chris, that they stay in the euro. And the only reason I think that is when you look at what happened in Greece, pretty much the same thing happened in Portugal, Ireland, Spain, Italy, where these countries, you know, were in essence railroaded. Not that they weren't running, you know, not that they had terrible social and political programs in place, but there was a lot of fraud, I believe, in a lot of that debt. So if Greece goes out of the euro, you know, the bankers potentially have a risk of having this exposed, you know, this big scheme exposed of how they, in essence, indebt these countries in order to be able to reap the collateral that these countries have. It's really, you know, it's talked about in the great book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which I'm sure many in the audience have read.
No, we've had John Perkins on the show in the past. It's been a few years. Fantastic guest. And he lays it all out there and outlines it. And I think you make another really important point. You talk about this scheme, this banker trap, if you will, or maybe net that's kind of slowly coming up around all of us, and in particular there in Southern Europe. And what I find so ironic is the Greek drachma. Very few people talk about the 700-year history of this silver-backed currency that was really the hallmark of currencies or the envy of many countries around the world. They had this solid, stable economy. They weren't dependent on their northern neighbors and whatnot, a feat of financial engineering, and they've lost that. And there's no talk about it other than from Hugo Salinas Price, you know, the self-made billionaire in Mexico, who suggested you guys need to return to a silver-based currency. That's what led to your great success in the first place.
I agree 100%. It's actually a really good point. You're right. It's not talked about enough. And I've been saying now for some time, Chris, that I think Greece would be way better off if they did get out of the euro, if they did go back to a currency that was backed by some type of commodity, in this case, silver. And if they rebuilt their economy around their tourism, mining, and shipping that they have an abundance of, does that mean it's going to be an easy road? Of course not. Anytime, I mean, it's like, you know, if right now you had someone, you know, the new president say, hey, listen, we are in dire straits financially. Here's what we need to do. We need to go back to a gold-backed currency. We need to raise interest rates. We need to, you know, begin to have austerity. That's going to inflict major pain. But the pain that will come from not doing any of those things is typically revolution, economic collapse, social chaos. Certainly, that's a potential for Greece. But it's really unfortunate because, you and I can sit here, Chris, and the audience can, you know, listen in. And you know, I think a lot of us would agree that makes sense. You know, go through the pain, but let's rebuild. It certainly hasn't been playing out like that, not just with Greece, but with the U.S. and with most of the West.
Price says, take 10% of your gold stockpile, and instead of enriching your northern neighbors, all of these debtors and creditors, you could then simply buy up a big stockpile of silver and make sure that every household has that safety net in place, and that will cushion some of that pain that you're talking about in the short term, and also help offset the inevitable day of reckoning. It's going to come if they don't take some kind of steps eventually anyway, so it's a great point, but let's shift gears back here to the United States. You know, you bring up, I think, some points in recent videos, and you talk about the job paradigm. I'm going to let you run with the ball here. What an interesting topic. 93 million Americans officially no longer in the job force. That's about one in three people. You say this is due to a changing workplace, and most of us have our heads stuck in the collective sand. Help prepare our listeners today.
Well, certainly, it is the end of the job paradigm. I mean, you know, everyone's heard the analogy, you go to school, you go to college, get a good job, and that used to work. That used to work out in the United States. It used to work out in most of the industrialized world. It's not working out anymore, though. Even the ones that do go to college and walk away with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, they can't repay back their loans, or if they can, you're lucky to get a job at Starbucks. In fact, there's a Starbucks coffee not far from where I live, Chris, and I promise you, everyone that works there has graduated from a college, because I talked to them. It's graduated from a pretty decent college, and they're working at Starbucks. So, you know, when you factor in automation, when you factor in globalization, when you factor in the rise of the robots, when you factor in applications and smartphones and all the new technology, you're talking about millions upon millions of jobs that will never come back. What it means is that they have to change and adapt. Personally, I believe that there is, you know, that we are living in the golden age of business, which, you know, is maybe runs counter to the first 10 minutes of talking about, you know, the global economic reset and all this other problems that we see. But in spite of that, we live in a world today where anyone can start a business on the internet with really no money. I mean, you know, some money, but think about it. 10 years ago, you wanted to start a new business. You needed to get a lease. You maybe needed to get a loan from the bank. You don't need to do that. So the barrier, you know, has really been broken. Unfortunately, there's not enough people taking advantage of it, maybe because just out of ignorance, they just may not know about it. But that's where I think the new opportunity lies. Let me give you another real quick one, too. Goldseek Radio. You know, you have this passion. You have this show. You have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that download your podcasts. You know, it's like you have to be able to, in this age, you have to be able to create your own job. And what I found is when you create your own job based around what you love to do, it's the way to go.
But I also wanted to direct our listeners back onto this job paradigm that you referred to, that up to half of the current jobs could evaporate over the next decade or so. And then most of the jobs that we will be offered in the future don't even exist now. Now, that's a sea change. That is something that's going to catch everyone off like a boomerang out of left field. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on there.
I'm glad you brought that up. And you know, Chris, I'm 36 years old. I look at the world, how it's changed just since my 20s, and it's incredible, really. I mean, what's the next 10 years going to look like? So, yes, of course, we're not going to know what most of the jobs that are out there are going to, because we don't know what technology is going to be like. We don't know. And, you know, look, there's people that will listen to this and say, well, no, the economic collapse is going to be so bad. It's going to be the dark ages for the next 500 years. You know, I personally disagree with that. Of course, anything's possible. I'll just say that the only thing that we can expect when it comes to the job market is it's rapidly evolving and changing. And unless people aren't rapidly evolving and changing, and unfortunately, for people that are in their 60s and 70s, or, you know, they may be retired, but let's say late 50s, early 60s, you know, it becomes a little bit harder to evolve and change.
And we're all going to have to see how we can most efficiently and effectively prepare ourselves to create the value that you talk about so regularly.
I think people need to be really careful, because as things deteriorate with the economy, the statists will use that deterioration to pass more draconian legislation that will only make things worse. And the example of that is the $15 an hour minimum wage that they implemented in places like Seattle and some other places, where restaurants are closing down left and right because the business owners cannot afford it. What's most interesting is that you have these people that are demanding $15 an hour for the, you know, to make French fries. In 2 years, the French fry machine is going to take their job. And of course, you know, the politicians know this, and the unions that represent these people know this. They don't care, though. And it's really sad that, you know, there's a culture today of you need to be dependent on your job instead of, you know, what about being dependent on yourself, maybe a higher power to help you, you know, funnel? Because, you know, look, we all have, you know, whether you get them from God, whatever you believe in, we all have these unique gifts that are unique to us. I think we need to implement them and use them as a way, like you said, to add value. And to become self-reliant.
The takeaway point is to start preparing now, whether you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, or even 60s. I mean, it's going to be a challenging environment. And my guess is you're going to tell everybody, hey, you need that entrepreneurial spirit.
You know, some people would chalk up, well, the people that had jobs in the Great Depression, or the people that still have jobs now, they're lucky. Or the entrepreneur that started his business and made it, he's lucky. Truth is that, you know, I personally don't believe in luck. I think luck is more of a factor of preparedness meeting opportunity. And that's something everyone can do. Look, we listen, we hear, and I'm sure, Chris, you hear this all the time as well. We hear, if you want to get prepared, go get, you know, food storage, guns and gold. And look, I believe in all that, and I've done all that. But at the end of the day, I need to be able to provide for my family and I. So what am I doing about that? I'm not somebody who believes, you know, I believe there will always be financial markets. There were financial markets in the Dark Ages. There were financial markets in the Great Depression. You know, what side do I want to be on? Do I want to be somebody who's trying to add value to the marketplace, even if times are hard? Or do I want to be somebody that's dependent on the state for my livelihood and the livelihood of my two young children? You know, it's pretty obvious which one I want. And I think most of the listeners would want that for themselves as well. I mean, look, you look at places, for example, like Venezuela or Cuba, where almost everybody's a doctor or an engineer because it's free college. Everybody can just go. Guess what? There's no job. You look at here in the States, and it's like, you know, it seems like when I was in high school, there was vo-tech school. Now, vo-tech, if you utter the name vo-tech, it's like a bad, you know, how dare you? Well, guess what? People need their refrigerators fixed, and that's a good job. And I'm so supportive of vo-tech vocational schools. We need more of them. And you're right. Not everyone. And you know, I, in fact, like you said, I have several family members who are plumbers, fix appliances. They're doing really well. Business is doing great.
I think it makes good sense. And not to mention, if you have a passion for a particular area, you can always self-educate or you can go online today. I mean, look at MIT, look at Yale, look at all of these great schools. Stanford and others are offering a tremendous amount of material from folks like Dr. Schiller of the Case Schiller Index. I mean, he has something like 100 hours of his best financial economic courses online. They're free of charge for anybody who's down at the library or has an iPhone. Alternatives, if you have a passion for learning, that don't require, as you say, $100,000 in debt. Please tell folks more about the excellent services you provide and how people can get in touch with you if they'd like to.
Sure, yeah. They can go to, they can see my YouTube videos at Fabian4Liberty. That's Fabian, the number 4, liberty.com. And for a lot of my entrepreneur seminars and things that I teach, they can always go to FabianCalvo.me. That's FabianCalvo.me.
Fabian Calvo, please return to Gold Seek Radio soon.
Absolutely. Chris, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.